ain't no telling where I'm. Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your best underminery bars of music, news, and criticism. I am your host, John Caramonica.
Hey, little mama, would you like to be my sunshine? We touch my game, we gon' turn this to. Ice on my neck, cost me 10 times 3. $30,000 for a new rocket fleet. I just hit Rodeo and I spent like 10 G's. I just did a show and spent the check on my mama. When I go and vacay, I might rent out the Bahamas. And I keep like 10 phones, then I'm really never home. All these new clones trying to copy what I'm on.
Welcome to the end of 2016. What a relief. That is Broccoli that you were listening to by Drom and Lil Yachty. And we are here in our final last gasp of this awful year to talk about the songs that in some way define the annum, for better and for worse. To do so, I am joined by an all-star panel. I would like to thank my guest in advance, Karen Gantz, pop music editor of the New York Times.
Hello.
Julianne Shepherd, culture editor of Jezebel.com.
Oh, hey.
And first time on the podcast,
yay,
Natalie Weiner, associate editor of Billboard Magazine and Billboard.com.
Out here, hey.
Yes, the most out here. Unfortunately for Natalie, we will not be discussing jazz today. We did that last week. but we will be talking about many of the songs of 2016 that inspired a lot of feelings. Mm-hmm. I picked a list, sort of singles jukebox style, with an emphasis on songs that I thought would get people disagreeing, or at least would get us talking about other people's disagreements, which is, in the internet age, just as viable a form of contentious argument. So let's start with Broccoli. Broccoli is, I think, the most important for being the true pop breakthrough moment for Lil Yachty. Lil Yachty is the Atlanta rapper, sort of rapper, who basically 12 months ago was a kid with good hair and one SoundCloud hit, and now is something of a legitimate cross-media cultural force. And Broccoli was, to me, the thing that actually threatened to cement him in the firmament. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean that in sort of an affectionate way. I think even his best songs didn't quite do what Broccoli did. What's y'all's vibe on Broccoli? And we can talk about Drom too, but I think Yachty is sort of the jumping off point. Julianne?
I think Yachty was dismissed because, A, he's young, and I think that there's still, somehow in 2016, there's still sort of that, like, you know, old school slash new school lyricism versus not lyricism.
Should we list everybody who was mad at Lil Yachty this year?
I mean, we actually did a roundup in the magazine.
People who
were
mad?
Old heads versus young rappers, you know, and had them, like, heads facing off.
Because, yeah, like, Funkmaster Flex, Ebro, even Soulja Boy.
Yuck.
Pete Rock.
When Soulja Boy is mad at you, you know you're onto something new.
That's totally true. How old's Soulja Boy now?
I mean, he must be like 25
My
at least.
God, yeah.
I think Absol, too, actually like said stuff randomly.
You know, Absol.
Trying to stay relevant. I
guess. Yeah, trying to get his numbers up, get his follows up.
but he's like 30, so it's like, why are you?
Right, exactly. Like, let the kid live. I feel like one of the things I found most charming about Yachty this year was the kind of the calm and equanimity with which he responded to all this, where he was just like, hey, guys, I'm just trying to, like, promote positivity.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know why all you senior citizens are so mad. Like, I'm just out here trying to be. He's basically just based.
He's
super based. Is Yachty in a position to be more of a sort of threat in 2017? Or is this going to be like a weird curio that we all look back on a few years from now?
I think if you are a lot younger than we are, yes. I mean, I think Yachty really has this sort of, I think he has the persona, A. He's very, very charming. I would recommend if you have an inherent bias against Lil Yachty to just watch any interview with him, because he's just like so charismatic and so charming and cool. He's excellent. He's very based. But also, I think he really came through in this song, and I think that he had bars. I think he was forceful with them, and I think his performance was excellent. And I think that it just shows him getting better, and it portends better music to come.
Natalie?
At the same time, though, it's definitely like kind of a kitschy novelty hit kind of song.
Yes.
So, to me, like, I was trying to think of what
as are many of Drom's records.
Right.
Not in a bad way. Like,
no,
I like that album.
No, but he has, like, he has legit songs, like the one with SZA from his other, I don't know, I love it. Anyway, but for me, I was trying to think of what the parallel would be from 2015, mm-hmm. and I feel like it's like Hotline Bling, you know, which somebody, I think you drew out this comparison mm-hmm. of like Drom, you know, in 2016 mm-hmm. versus, you know, Drake copying his song in 2015, mm-hmm. but I really think the song plays the same role. It's like a little kitschy, it's just kind of like, kind of goofy, but catchy enough that it really like has this huge impact. And like my favorite part of Broccoli was just all the videos of babies dancing to it. There is like a whole internet mine of baby dancing videos to Drom. And it's perfect because that's what the song is meant for, basically.
The last thing that I want to add about Yachty before we move on in this speed round edition of the podcast is for those of you who are concerned that Yachty does not have bars, I want to encourage you to listen to Mixtape on the Chance the Rapper record, where Yachty has a flames verse. That's actually a verse. And it's not one of these weird tossed-off freestyles that, like, oh, there's something kind of like Saw 4 about watching Yachty freestyle for Ebro, where it's like literally like his leg is attached to the wall and like he can't get out unless he like delivers a freestyle that was relevant in 1996. But like on Mixtape, he actually has a verse that has bars, and I encourage you all to listen to it. Next song.
It's easy to say, we have a list of people that we would take. A bullet for them, a bullet for you, a bullet for everybody in this room. But they don't seem to see many bullets coming through.
That is Ride by 21 Pilots, a.k.a. the Karen Gans National Anthem.
What's
Karen
up?
Gans. Karen Gans.
That's why I'm here today, everybody. I'm going to talk about 21 Pilots.
I mean, that is not the case, but this is it. I would not rather have any other person here to talk about 21 Pilots.
I appreciate you.
But you.
Yes.
Wagwan with Ride.
You want me to talk about it?
Oh, do I?
Okay, well, first, you know, this album came out last year, but its impact was really happening this year.
Did it, yeah.
And this isn't even the biggest track they had this year, which I believe was Heathens from the Suicide Squad.
Yes, but I was trying to,
soundtrack.
I was trying to, like, mix it up a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
We can get there.
Yes. But go ahead.
Do you not enjoy the light reggae ska vibes? Right?
Shouts to all my Sublime heads. Yeah. Is there like a fan name for Sublime people?
Subliminal.
Oh, I like that there's like a weird also like quasi-racial stuff going on. Okay. Yeah. Nice. Okay, so this is for our subliminals.
It has multiple vibes.
Yeah,
John,
yeah, it
does. They have another song called Lane Boy, which you might not be familiar with.
Wow.
All about how
darts.
People are trying to tell them to stay in their lane. But they have no lane because the music industry, you know, creativity is laneless.
It's also hard to have crazy lanes when there's just two of you and you just kind of do the same thing over and over again. So that's like a little bit of a challenge.
But you see, there's two of them. I think that part's right.
Yes.
But I wouldn't say they do the same thing over and over again. No, when you listen to that record, it is weird. It's all over the place.
A lot of weird stuff.
Yeah.
But okay, so part of the
reason, don't have guitars, John.
I know.
Okay.
But okay, so here's part of the reason I wanted to talk about 21 Pilots in like a very serious way. When I think of rock music with the heaviest quotation marks.
He's making quotation marks, yes.
Literally around the whole room. In 2016, I think of bands that are fully hybridized. I think of bands that de-emphasize what we think of as rock tropes. Like you say, 21 Pilots does not have a guitar.
Mm-hmm.
How is it that rock music in this moment in time is actually a complete, I would say, avoidance of what we would historically think of as rock music in the mainstream?
I think they
I mean, shouts
are.
To Mitski, you know, like, but
yeah,
I'm saying
yeah,
in
yeah.
the mainstream.
When I think of the mainstream, though, I mean, rock, it's hard to find, as the Grammy nominations have made clear, the rock, you know, categories are head-scratchers.
Just go on Conan. Just go on Conan and you get a Grammy nomination. It's totally easy.
It's true. Or, you got to play Little Kid Instruments with the Roots on Fallon. That's
super
the other
chill.
Thing. Yeah.
It's whatever.
But I still think of the Foo Fighters. You know, and Springsteen. Well, yes. I accept your condolences.
Yes.
Remember, I worked at Rolling Stone for 5 years.
Yeah. Yeah. PTSD. It's
still,
all good.
Still in here. These guys are so young. If you've read interviews with them, it's like they're kind of post-genre, which I know right. everybody could say in every genre, but they're like, we don't see ourselves as like falsely appropriating hip hop or mm-hmm. ska or anything else. You know, this is just like the vibe on each song is different to us, and that's we appropriate but they grab the right sound for the right lyrics, mm-hmm. and that's the way they work.
But do you think that it's meaningful that basically no traditional rock band can achieve the scale that this band can in this moment?
I do think it's meaningful. Yeah. I think it actually has a lot to do with radio, which is something you discussed on the last podcast.
Yeah.
But radio is still like weirdly important in breaking new artists.
Right.
And since there's no rock radio, in fact, there's no rock radio station in New York City playing new rock. There's
right.
only classic rock stations. If a band like 21 Pilots, if their record label, and they are on, I believe, Roadrunner, not a major, but a large label,
yeah, right.
Is trying to break them, they're going to go to radio, mm-hmm. in addition to Spotify and other places, mm-hmm. you know, to get on playlists. So anyway, I think it's meaningful because it helps them get on every radio format.
Right. So in essence, basically, a rock band can't be targeted to a rock format because a rock format's not
barely
relevant.
Exists at this point.
Right.
Yeah.
What's going on in Billboard with
what's
rock?
Going on in
yeah,
Billboard?
What's going on with
Billboard? I mean, 21 Pilots is obviously like a huge thing that just this year as far as sales and as far mm-hmm. as everything. I mean, they topped the rock chart for like 500 years, mm-hmm. basically. The interesting thing with them to me is just like how they've developed their fan base. And to me, it seems to be the same fan base as like Fall Out Boy and Panic at the Disco,
oh,
who they have the label connection with. It's the same like teens who consider themselves like emo and kind of like outcasts, mm-hmm. but they love 21 Pilots, which is like, you know, the aesthetic is very mainstream of 21 Pilots, mm-hmm. but somehow like what they're singing about, like, you know, I don't even remember the lyrics to the song, but
you
it just
blurry face.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just like all this very sort of like we stand alone, you know, and so they're tapping into that thing without really any of the aesthetic thing to back it up, which to me is very like mid-aughts emo-y.
Gans, where are you at on this?
It's interesting because it's musically. They don't seem to fit into the same lane. But then in terms of their just like art aesthetic
yes.
and their imagery associated with
what
them, it's like dark and grimy and comic booky
and
super villainy and stuff like that.
Yeah. And they started as a live act. Like that's how they developed their following, mm-hmm. was like touring everywhere and just like they had this insane fan base. And then they kind of came out of nowhere as far as like sales.
And now they're playing The Garden.
Yeah.
And Karen and I both. Did you see them at Garden?
Two sold out nights at the Garden. They'll be returning.
Sold out.
In New Jersey.
Yes. Yeah,
sold out. A little advertisement for 21 Pilots.
One of them nights I went and one of the nights you went.
Yes.
I know you enjoyed it.
We may have disagreed.
Critically. Yeah. I felt like I went in really wanting to like it. Like, really wanting to love it, I should say. And I don't know. I felt like the dynamics didn't fill the room. I thought the energy filled the room, but the actual dynamics did not fill the room. I felt the thinness of the conceit up against a huge space. I was like, oh, you're painting on a huge canvas with like this weird tiny brush.
It's a strong disagreement.
Yes, no, I know. Like, but
I was surprised that a two-man band could have such an impact in a room that size, because I've seen the White Stripes. You know, I've mm-hmm. seen other two-person bands before, and they've been more of like a pure musical experience. I thought it was a combination of, like, you know, intelligent imagery and video pieces and, like, a ton of dynamics. Did you see the performance?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just the drummer, I feel terrible that I can't remember his name now,
right.
and it's a two-man band. But, I mean, he's an excellent drummer. And one of these dynamic, you know, Travis Barker types where it's like, oh, I want to watch this drummer. And the other guy, very helpful.
This will happen again when we talk about the Chainsmokers.
It's true. I apologize.
I know the Chainsmokers.
Okay, good.
Yeah. But they're engaging musicians, and their musicianship is excellent. I think that the interaction they have with their fans, the attachment is really strong.
Yeah.
Anyway, I disagree. I felt like they filled the Garden.
Right.
I was wowed.
Moving on.
Yes. I feel like a buzzer just went off.
That is Safari by J Balvin with Pharrell Williams, Sky, and Bia. And this is one in a series of relentless reggaeton light hits by J Balvin, who has, in the last 2 to 2.5 years, really come to dominate the sort of Latin urban space in a way that I find a little asphyxiating. J Balvin is, I think, not the most nuanced rapper, and I feel like his production is conciliatory at best. And yet he is, well, probably because of that, wildly popular, even to the point of being on the cover of The Fader. Mm-hmm. Shouts to our friends at The Fader. Why J Balvin? When I listen to J Balvin up against some of the other stuff that's going on in that space, he seems like maybe the least interesting guy. Shep, what do you think?
I mean, I think in particular the song represents a shift. I think that we've seen in the past couple of years this sort of dembo rhythm being kind of, you know, watered down into like milky.
Yeah, it's definitely terrible. Definitely milky. No, that's a good word.
A milky Justin Bieber style. And I think that people who are actually working in reggaeton spaces are wanting to get away from that, get away from the idea of sort of top 40 non-Latino use of dembo. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where this kind of comes in. It's interesting also that Pharrell, I've been waiting for this sort of reggaeton crossover with someone who's in the English-speaking sphere. And it's interesting that it's Pharrell, and it's that it's Pharrell singing in Spanish.
Pharrell, big year Pharrell, singing in Spanish, singing like a half gospel record. Like, you know, Pharrell far from the center at this point.
But yeah, I think that part of it is just that J Balvin's appeal is that he is really multinational.
Yep.
I think you can kind of project what you want onto him, which I think is he's the nice guy.
So the blankness is strategic.
I think the blankness is strategic.
Sure.
But I love this song. Mm-hmm. I think it's great. I think Bia has the best verse, clearly, if that wasn't obvious.
Yeah.
you know, it makes sense that it's a huge hit, and I would rather hear this sort of watered down reggaeton than I love Skrillex, but I'm not trying to hear like mainstream Moombahton for the rest of my life on radio.
I mean, I feel like just looking at how people in dancehall and reggaeton can capitalize on the fact that now the aesthetic that they've been doing forever has become at least a tiny bit mainstream, you know, as you're saying, in its most watered down form. Like, that makes me happy. Like, I want them. I want them to win. I want, like, the legit people.
Yeah,
but
you know Afrobeats is coming for them anyway.
I mean, I hope so.
Sorry.
Like, I don't know about J-Hood.
I'm just saying, like, that's like
2017.
That's a thing that's happening, and it's actually very strange to watch that happen and kind of, like, sneak up behind Caribbean music sort of be like, actually.
Yeah, no, it's
While we're here, we'll just, yeah.
The circles of influence there are very interesting. Mm-hmm. But I love the song, too.
We will get back to that in a little bit, but on to the next.
And a crisp new Benjamin for when you're here, then gone again. And a dollar every time I was right about to ask.
So that is Rich by Maren Morris, which is, I believe, still an album cut. Maybe it's not yet a single, but seems inevitably to be like her fourth.
I hope so.
Yeah, fourth. That's like definitely a solid fourth or fifth single. Maren Morris is a rising young country star, nominated for Best New Artist at the Grammys. It's interesting to watch country try to continue to reconcile with women, or rather watching women trying to continue to reconcile with country music. Obviously, you know, in the last 2 or 3 years, you had this sort of Kacey Musgraves moment. But of course, as I say time and time and time and time again, Kacey Musgraves is, in my heart, I believe, not a disruptor. She is a winker, but not a disruptor. And Maren Morris, I think, at peaks on her album, really does seem to be offering a little bit more of a challenge. And Rich is definitely the funniest song on the record, and probably the most fun as well.
It's actually really fascinating that Maren Morris didn't get the Kacey Musgraves treatment by the media, where Kacey Musgraves was like upending country music and you know, but still actually doing this very traditional,
yes,
sort of old school style. And Maren Morris is
also
actually,
shouts to the fader while we're here.
Also, sorry, shouts to the fader for putting Kacey Musgraves, sorry, on the cover with
we
that.
We can talk about that later.
Yes. But Maren Morris actually is doing that. And also she's taking this idea, this sort of maligned idea of pop country, mm-hmm, and making it more pop. But also, yep, I feel like, yeah, Rich could be a Sky Ferreira song.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. No, I mean, I,
wow,
love this album.
Ariel Rechstein.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of undeniable, this album. Like, even if you're like, oh, I don't like country, I don't like pop country, what they play on the radio. Like, it's just a very cohesive statement for someone who's as young as she is. And, I mean, she started as a songwriter, as so many people do in Nashville. And then she just, like, put together this thing, basically, allegedly on her own, as that's the narrative that she's selling anyway. Mm-hmm. She openly says, like, Sheryl Crow is who I want to be. And it seems like that's the direction that she's going in.
And what a good lane. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Nobody's,
I mean,
doing
no one,
it.
No one's been in it in 15 years. No one's Sheryl Crow. Also, yeah, if you're mad at Sheryl Crow, I don't believe
you're
you.
You're mad at yourself.
You're mad at yourself.
It's really striking to see how tough a time when women continue to have in Nashville. The fact that we talk about Maren Morris as some kind of, like, literally a rare bird. Like, oh, my God, there's Maren Morris. Like, let's protect Maren Morris. Let's make sure that, da-da-da. And which is an instinct I understand, but it shocks me how the genre can find, you know, seven Thomas Rhett's.
Right.
And only one, yes, Maren, well, Morris.
Okay. I'm going to say Kelsey Ballerini and Maren Morris,
yes,
to me, are at the same place. Like, they're both young
Kelsey
women.
Ballerini. I'm more like, yeah, okay.
They're both young women who, like, have a lot of agency in their careers and have taken a lot of initiative as far as writing songs and really shaping a sound that they're, you know, proud of. And it's very
Taylor Swift. Sorry.
Well,
oh, sorry.
Okay.
Did I say
I
that?
Mean, yes. Oh, certainly post Taylor Swift, but, like, I think, I mean, Kelsey more than Maren.
Yes.
But yeah, it's impressive to me. And Kelsey's, like, literally breaking country chart records. That's, you know, that's not something that happens every day for women. So
Kelsey Ballerini album's fire.
Wither, Miranda Lambert.
Yeah.
John is such a hater about this album.
This is not the wave, this album.
It is the wave. I
know Natalie.
On it.
I know Natalie, yeah, likes it.
I do like it.
I think the worst thing for Miranda Lambert to be is, like, a respectable midline country star. And this album is, like, the first time where I was like, oh, you're like a respect, like, you're just a person who makes country albums.
You didn't feel that any of the albums she made while married to Blake accomplished that?
No, I mean, I think she managed to maintain a kind of, like, outsider affect, mm-hmm, while being successful. And this is the first album that feels like a Nashville album.
Really?
To me, yeah.
I don't know. To me, it seems like the only one that she's done that doesn't have any songs that are like, this is for radio, you know?
Yeah,
but I feel
so
like
I agree with that.
But I feel like her radio songs were also kind of, like,
definitely,
maybe the most badass ones.
I mean, a lot of times that's true. Gunpowder and Lead, et cetera. But
there's
I think
a lot of badassery.
She's stepping away from the pop space, but I don't see that as inherently bad. I like the album. It feels very personal, obviously, and, like, just, like, she made it in a different way. You know, she wasn't going, like, the producers, I'm getting the songs from the Nashville.
I'm just
people,
saying, whatever. If you want that, go listen to Lori McKenna.
No, but Miranda Lambert has a better voice than Lori McKenna. So.
Okay, fine. I'm not going to disagree
this
with that.
This is the Shots cast.
All right, moving on.
Caroline, listen up. Don't want to hear about your horoscope or what the future holds. Shut up and let's get gory. Like a Tarantino movie. Don't want to talk it out. Can we f*** it out? Cause we gon' be up all night f***ing the decaf. You see, I'm a tall thug. Yes, I'm a giraffe. If you want sex, baby, use the knee pad. Freaky with the sticky icky, baby, give me kitty kitty. Killer. West Side Killer.
Let's get gory. That is Aminé's Caroline.
I didn't realize this was karaoke.
Feel free to sing along to any of the parts.
This baby knows too much about the world.
Oh, yes. True story, though. I think we're in an interesting moment in hip-hop where obviously the fluidity between, like, weirdo SoundCloud hit and, like, top 20 pop record it's basically there is no wall, there is no barrier anymore. I think this is a good example of that for 26. I mean, in addition to everything that Lil Yachty does, this is a good example of that, but was even more successful than like any of the Yachty solo records. Aminé is from Portland, which is a city I know is extremely near and dear to two of the people on our panel today.
No, not. I'm from Seattle. I hate Portland.
Okay, that counts too. That's like a version of near and dear. That's like a version. Negative energy is still energy. Let's talk about how this record kind of ended up in the very public space that it is right now. Jay Shep, I know you got something to say about this.
I'm not sure exactly how, but he had tons of Spotify streams. And I remember finding it at some point in like April in Spotify Discovery. Mm. Literally the only time I've ever found something new in Spotify Discovery. And I remember being
I just think about what's in Spotify Discovery, and I think that's totally plausible.
I mean,
it's a plausible thing to say about Spotify Discovery.
My algorithms are already out there, baby.
Mine are very bad.
So he just sort of flourished. He's very dicey about his sort of history and how he got into rapping.
His heritage is Ethiopian.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Raised in Portland, I'm pretty sure.
Raised in Portland. He said that he started rapping. The one thing that seems real is he started rapping by doing diss tracks for Grant High School, which Grant High is one of the, you know, three major high schools in Portland, Oregon.
Okay. Diss tracks against Grant High.
Yeah. I think he must have gone to Lincoln.
It's like just representing everyone else in Portland.
Right, just the whole city against like these 3,000 kids. Just these poor kids just getting shots.
I believe that he was also in high school at the time.
Okay.
It's what copy editors are for.
Yeah.
But that's like not like if you watch the video for Caroline, it feels like a high school. It has a sort of charming kind of naivete and innocence, and it's you know, he's like rapping in like a parking lot of like some hamburger joint or whatever.
Yeah.
It feels very local and also very wistful at the same time, but the song is like raunchy.
It's deliciously raunchy.
Yeah, like really, really raunchy. And Natalie is like scrunching her face. Like, Natalie,
I don't find it deliciously raunchy. I find it gross, and I'm down for deliciously raunchy.
That is the flip side in general, but it's just like
like, no.
Have you heard the Pop Can Christmas song?
Yeah. I haven't, but I definitely want to listen to that.
Yeah.
It definitely is. I mean, yeah, it's very like high school or sort of, you know, young boy's ideal idea of like, you know, raunchiness. But I like that. And I think what feels so Portland to me is that the inventiveness of just the beats and sort of it has such a DIY feel in a way that I don't think a lot of other sort of, I guess, top streaming Spotify songs do, or any like rap songs in that. I don't want to say any, but it has a very DIY sense of like, you know, bringing electro together and sort of.
It's like mildly, at least in his aesthetic, is mildly Native Tongues-ish, you know, it's like a very 1990, 1991 aesthetic. The BPMs are low.
Yeah.
And I think the way it kind of like boops along feels very much odd. Like when we think of, I think, rap records that are like kind of like coming up on streams only or on really popular on YouTube, you know, we're thinking street records, we're thinking, you know, whether it's Chicago street records or what. Like, you're not thinking this kid with a Quentin Tarantino t-shirt sort of like being weird in a parking lot.
It's a pretty inexplicable success.
Yeah.
Well, I think you can't really divorce it from Bay Area stuff that's popular. I think that the Bay has always really influenced my little background knowledge. The Bay has always really influenced Portland's rap scene.
Cool Nuts?
Cool Nuts maybe not so much, but shout out Cool Nuts. That dude has been grinding his whole life.
Yeah.
But there's like a similar sort of feel to that very hyper locality and that sort of, you know, West Coast like slow vibe, even like quasi innocence.
Just me thought Aminé was innocent and mildly guileless, except in the obvious raunch way. When he went on Fallon, I think it was, to do this song, he added like 60 seconds of bars against Donald Trump at the end, just apropos of nothing to do with the song. And I thought it was really powerful and really beautiful. And how nice how sort of like you know, it's his first big TV look, and he's just like, I'm going to go in, and what a gift.
Well, that makes me like him more. I didn't realize that.
Natalie, but yeah.
The song is just
redeemed.
Like,
yes.
I don't know.
So it's just like, listen to that. We'll just make you a loop of those 60 seconds. Okay, on to the next. Okay, it's guest pick time. Natalie, because Natalie was so upset about Amine, this is now Natalie's pick.
I was not so upset. I'm just explaining that I think the song is gross.
Okay, Natalie was revolted at Amine. We just gave Natalie's guest pick a listen, which is Ariana Grande's New Better / Forever Boy. Natalie, what's really good with this Ariana Grande record?
Well, I basically just feel the need to defend Ariana Grande in all public spaces because I feel like she's been slighted this year.
She's in need of defense? Okay.
I mean, she's got a top 10 hit right now, so not as much. Yeah. But I think that this is the best song on her album. Mm. You know, it's
not her best album.
No, not her best album.
Not her best album.
But the album, it's you love it?
I love the album. It's
really?
Good.
Yeah.
It's
your favorite? Is it your favorite?
It's not my favorite.
Oh, yeah. But you really love
but
it?
But I really like the album.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
I mean, I think it got sort of maligned because it's pretty chaotic. Like, there's a lot of different stuff going on. But this song really, to me, speaks to Ariana Grande at, like, her best potential besides, like, Mariah Redux R&B, which is, like, her other best potential. But this, like, Ryan Tedder written sort of, like, great housey pop track, it's just, like, it's so good. And it's kind of long and a little weird. And it's got two parts, hence the slash. And it's never going to get radio play or anything like that. But it's just, like, see, Ariana Grande can do good things. And this song is like one of my most listened to Spotify songs. Like, I love it.
She did good things for two full albums.
I know, but people still say bad things. I was about to swear. But, like, you know. No, like.
Saved.
Ari, we got you.
Yeah.
Natalie's protecting you.
I don't know. I mean, it's just a really good song. And I think it's going to languish in album cut obscurity forever. But I love it.
Okay. Does anybody else have thoughts on Ariana Grande's 2016, Side to Side, et cetera?
Maybe I wasn't paying close enough attention because I didn't really see that she was being maligned. But I also felt like she really expanded her repertoire. She was in Hairspray Live, which I am absolutely not a fan of the live renditions
of
musicals.
That's her natural home is Broadway.
Right, you know, but she was very good in it. She's in that animated film that is... I can't remember what it's called also. Thank you.
She has the Stevie Wonder song.
Right. And the only reason I knew that is because I heard her voice on the commercial, and her voice is inimitable.
Inimitable.
I like to see her sort of expand. And I mean, it was a little weird personally for her, I feel, but that's not my place to judge.
Well, two things. One, don't you think that like expanding into like that light non-reggae is like maybe not the most worthy expansion?
And secondly,
shouts to Larry Fisherman.
I mean, I love her song with him on his album, my favorite part.
That's a cute song. It's a good record.
No.
No, I had to think of who that was because I don't know his government name. Why would I?
It's also not his government name, but I love that you thought it might be.
Whatever.
I mean, the most interesting thing about Side to Side is like when Lena Dunham didn't know what it meant and like tweeted about it, that was the most interesting thing that happened with that song.
Onward and upward. If you love me, don't let go. As you may not know, as many people in this room seem to not know, that was Unsteady by X Ambassadors, which is a bigger hit. Your fave could never have a hit as big as Unsteady by X Ambassadors. Everybody is looking at me like I am straight lunatic right now.
I spend
okay, fine, so I'll
so
talk
much
about
time in Forever 21, and I don't think I've ever heard
yeah. Fine, I will talk about X Ambassadors.
I have not heard this song.
X Ambassadors are a bad British group that make unpleasant post-Mumford electronica, yada yada. I included this song because I think it's illustrative of the way, not just the way streaming works, but the way pop is operating right now, which is that a band like this, which is fundamentally an anonymous band, maybe it's like if One Republic dropped acid and listened to and listened to James Blake one time and then woke up the next morning and went back to primary school. That's what this song sounds like.
Wow.
Okay?
We have to pause for tears.
and yeah. Shep is doing a marrow. She's doing a marrow dead pose right now. The fact that this is even a pop hit continues to blow my mind. It's a record I must have Shazammed like 10 times this year because I feel like I was just so hearing generic, it constantly, yeah. But it was also so anonymous that I did not know how to address it.
I like that you didn't retain it any time.
None. It's
why would you, though? Yeah. Like, really?
Because when I hear a song, I will say this, the bridge into the hook is, I think, effective. It's boring, but it's effective. And so every time that build would happen, I'd be like, what is this thing? And then I'd Shazam it, and I'd be like, oh, right, it's that thing. Because then by that point, it would have devolved back into the kind of like the anonymous grayness of the song itself. Yeah. No one else has anything to say about X Ambassadors.
I mean, your description was way better than mine, which was just like Coldplay with trap drums. But like,
well, there you go.
No, I mean, listening to it today for the first time when you sent it to me. No, I think it was interesting because, like you said, the bridge, I felt the crescendo in that, and I felt like it was telling me how to feel, and I recognized that emotion very distinctly, which was a sort of angst.
Yeah.
And a sort of teen but adult. I felt like in that moment I knew what it meant to be like a really depressed 37-year-old man.
Wow. What are you saying about
me? No, not you. I'm these guys. You didn't make the song. You had to Shazam it. You should feel proud.
That's true. That's totally true.
You know, I met the X Ambassadors once on a red carpet.
Everybody's got
dark. Did they make an impression?
Yeah. They were very nice.
I bet they were.
They were extremely, extremely kind when I had to ask them all the stupid questions I was required to ask them.
Shouts to red carpet interviews.
Apologies to ex ambassadors.
Yes, with all apologies to ex ambassadors.
You were nice to me once.
The one guy and the other guy.
No, there's like five of them.
Oh, and the other guy.
Well, the other guy's name we don't know.
Yeah. Let's go to the next one, which will be an antidote to the soppiness of ex ambassadors.
Posted on the block like a low life. I like my Fanta with no heist. Okay. She said my lifestyle is no nice. But my woody so good, they make her blow twice. Hey. Why you don't grind? You don't like money?
What?
We spend money like we don't like money.
What?
She love an ugly man making pretty money. And I'm an ugly man making sexy money. And I just wanna get friendly with her. Wanna get friendly with her. You see your big body where you find that. Make her pull up and rewind that. I just wanna get friendly with her. Wanna get friendly with her.
Okay, guys, now that you have washed X Ambassadors out of your ears and out of your armpits and all the other places that song existed in 2016, here is a tonic for your mottled souls. Julianne's guest pick is Jay Huss.
It's She's friendly. Dancing preemptively.
It's friendly.
Wanna get friendly with her.
Yes. Julianne, what's really, really good with Jay Huss?
Everything is very good with Jay Huss. Jay Huss is 20. He grew up in Newham, which is a suburb of South London. Mm-hmm. And kind of speaking to the Afrobeats conversation, yeah, and the idea of mainstream Caribbean music and African pop sounds going more mainstream, mm-hmm, in the U.S., I kind of see this as an antidote in itself to Drake's One Dance, which, mm-hmm, I think it was an interesting song because it took, you know, WizKid, and then it took an 8-year-old UK funky track, which, you know, I'm cranky about still, but because that was a good song. And now I can never not
hear
it with
him.
Yeah. So, but Jay Huss last year had a really big hit called Dem Boy Pagan, which kind of reflected this new sort of sound of very, very young.
Very polyglot.
very polyglot, very first and second generation immigrant kids, like teens, making this music that is a combination of like Afrobeat and Caribbean music, dancehall, and then also grime, and just mushing it all together for this really awesome new sound that's coming out of the UK. And so I've been thinking about this a lot because that won't happen as much after Brexit. And I've been thinking about how that's going to affect, as a, you know, complete maniac about certain strains of British music to the point of obsession. So I think this is a really current song because it really does reflect what sort of beauty a polyglot world can give to us artistically. That said, it is about a very attractive woman and how J-Hus would like to get with that woman.
Yeah, the line that really jumps out at me is the one where he's like, hey girl, I think you need, your chicken needs seasoning or something like that. Which is, I mean, I assume that's been used hundreds of times across England.
Shout out to Nando's.
Yeah, serious real talk. An interesting thing to me about this song is he comes from a place that's basically where a lot of grime dudes come from, but this is not a grime record at all, and he's not really, I understand there's elements of that in sort of his presentation, but he doesn't feel like a grime artist. The production is soft in a way, and I think that sort of global scale way that you're talking about, I feel like almost what you were saying earlier about J Balvin could loosely be applied to production on this record, which is you can imprint on it what you want to imprint on it.
Yeah, sure.
If you want it to be a tougher record, you can read it that way. If you want it to be like a Pitbull record or something, you know, you can read it that way as well.
It could be a Yard
anthem.
It's like Bashment.
But it literally could go either way. Was this a big pop record in the UK?
Yeah, so this was his first record on a label. Because Den Boy Pagan was just based on SoundCloud, and it was huge. Yeah, he got signed to, I think, Black Butters, which is an imprint of Sony UK. And so, you know, this has, I think, something like 6 million views on YouTube. It was a huge hit. It also is interesting that he says that he's inspired mostly by U.S. rappers.
It does, but that comes through, I think. Yeah, because I feel like he's... cadences don't feel particularly grime. They're not quite as the syllables don't kind of like tumble all over each other in quite the same way.
And there's also like a huge vocal range. Just, I mean, I only listened to it this morning for the first time, but just as far as the way he uses his voice, it's like really impressive. It goes all over, you know. So, but yeah, anything billed as an antidote to One Dance is great in my book. So
okay,
sorry Drake.
Yeah. So, wow. Okay. Okay, and here is the anti-J Hus.
I wanna be that song that gets you high, makes you dance, makes you fall. That melody rewinds years, wants to disappear, makes time stall.
That is the boy, Brett Eldridge, young country lord, with Wanna Be That Song. I just, before we get into this record, I do want to say that the Brett Eldridge Christmas record is flames. I think that is his true calling. I just want to put that out there.
I believe you thought the same thing about Casey Musgraves.
That's yes, but here's the thing. Casey Musgraves' true calling is Christmas music, because I think Casey Musgraves prides herself on being one click to the left of tradition, and good Christmas music is always one click to the left of tradition. I just think Brett Eldridge should be Josh Groban or Michael Bublé. Like, I just think he's literally in the wrong job.
Okay.
It's like, you know, like sometimes there's a guy who works on a factory floor, but really he should be a songwriter. That's Brett Eldridge, except he's a country.
You're describing like 10 seasons of American Idol.
Yes.
Okay.
This is my peak cowl.
It is. Boy, nobody loves holiday music more than John Caramonica.
True story. True story. Check nytimes.com/music and find out just how true that is. So Brett Eldridge, this was a very, very big record
It's just hit number one on AirPlay this week. I checked.
That's hot Billboard information.
You invite Billboard, you get information.
Get that date. You come to podcast, we give you data.
Yes.
So this is a rising country banger. It's probably my favorite Brett Eldridge song outside of his Christmas record. It's probably my favorite Brett Eldridge song. But I do want to talk a little bit about what's been happening in country. We talked about female country singers earlier. I want to talk about what's happening to the boys. This has been an interesting, I think, 18 months for male country singers. I think we are kind of in the long tail of bro country. Mm-hmm. And I think what's happened as a sort of rejoinder to bro country is what I would like to call gentleman country.
Yes.
Which is you have Thomas Rhett and you have Brett Eldridge.
And
you have
love
these
songs.
Yes. What's your man's name? William Michael Morgan.
That's not my man. Cole Swindell.
Cole Swindell. But you have these like very genius. Yeah, Cole Swindell is like right on.
You can invent more gentleman country sounding names than what you guys just said.
But like these are, Cole Swindell is definitely like right
on
the line.
He's bro right. country, but he has some tender moments.
He has a gentleman heart.
Trying to cherish,
he has a gentleman heart. You know? And I feel like the success of Eldridge and Rhett especially.
Mm-hmm. Die a Happy Man is crazy. Like
it's
the success
huge
of that song, it broke AirPlay records.
Yes, it's a huge, huge record, and it is a dignified record. And right now, you know, Florida Georgia Line is like out here floundering. You know,
they're not
all
floundering.
Oh
Holy
my gosh!
Was a big song.
It was a big song, but it's
and
not.
They've
but
lost
it is
their
not
the
peak.
Same vein as what we're talking.
That's
about.
What I'm saying. It's
That's,
not
it's
peak.
Part of this trend.
It's
of,
not
like,
peak
love
flaggle.
Songs in country.
Right. So gentlemen are running the
gentlemen
game.
Gentlemen are in.
Gentlemen are in. What happened with the bros? Natalie, tell us what you think.
I mean, I think it was just an oversaturation thing. You know, there's only. I mean, there were like infinite songs about like, oh, we'll get in the truck and have some beers and mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. And everyone I've spoken to in Nashville is like aware of this thing, like, and they apologize for it. They're like, we know that people like, I know, but they're like, we know like this is what people like on the radio, but like, and I talked to Eric Church recently and he was like, I really feel like we've taken a turn in the past year, 18 months or so towards a better quality of songwriting. And I think this Brett Eldridge song is indicative of that because it is like, you know, it's designed for country radio. It's not, you know, some outsider thing. But the song itself is a little bit different. It's not like every cliche that you would expect. It's got the song about a song thing, which is always cute. And it's sort of slightly more abstract in the sense that it's not like, you know, I'm going to drive you out to a lake and we're going to make out, you know, which is like sort of a subject of many country songs. This is more like, what? It's true. What? Am I wrong?
I guess my question is, like, is it the same lake? Can you just imagine like all the F-150s parked
lined up
at the same
at
lake?
The lake. For
with
sex.
A bunch of hands.
I mean, it's probably, there's probably a few lakes that are gathering places. But yeah, this is like slightly more
Brett
complex.
Eldridge knows some lakes.
He definitely knows some lakes.
And he knows the lakes where he just takes and talks to you about family and Christ. Yeah, I'm trying to make out.
Well, they all know those lakes too.
Yeah, I'm just saying. He's not trying to. He's not
they're
trying
different
to, lakes. He's not copping a feel. He just wants to show you nature.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's just, I think, part of that trend of just country radio slightly going back to its maybe parts of its roots that are more rooted in the songs themselves, you know, and less like the party vibe, which is totally acceptable and like a part of country music, but it seems to be a trend away from that.
Karen.
It was a serious year.
Yes.
And I think that had bro country continued on in the direction it was going, that it might have seen out of step with the times.
Hmm. Although.
I mean, yes, yeah. It was also an antidote to the times.
No, but this actually stresses me out about country music moving forward in the sort of contemporary political climate.
Yeah.
Is I wonder if we're going to end up with like the jingoistic country
yes.
of like 2001.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a legitimate concern.
I think that we
yeah.
might.
I mean,
like
we
Montgomery Gentry
it.
Is about to come back yeah. heavy. Your boy yeah. Toby Keith probably in the
yes.
lab.
Toby Keith
he is cooking right. Yo, he is cooking right now.
No, I mean,
but you know who else probably is
who?
The Dixie Chicks.
I hope so.
I hope so.
Nice
jinx, everyone.
Yeah. No, but okay.
Call us,
Natalie. On that note, like. Not May We know. All by Florida Georgia Line and Tim McGraw. It's like one of their cuts.
Yep.
It's the first line, and it like honestly makes me want to throw up a little bit, is May We All Grow Up in a Red, White, and Blue Little Town. Like that's the way the song starts, and it was like a number one AirPlay hit. So that kind of language, it's softened, I think, since 9/11. Like, there was, like, the boom post 9/11, and then it declined a little bit. But I think it definitely could explode again.
Well, I would say watch country radio in 2017.
Yeah, seriously. Yes. And just, you mentioned Tim McGraw, and it's probably worth mentioning Humble and Kind in this sort of, like, large. Yes, it is treacly, and it was better when it was a Lauren McKenna song.
Yes, it definitely was.
It shows you what happens when you take a woman's song and put it in a man's mouth.
Or my favorite person who I love to hate and also love is Raylan.
Yes.
She didn't do anything this year, right?
Did she have the Love Triangle song, or was that someone else?
No, it's been a long year.
Yeah, it's been a long
year. She had one of the songs.
We couldn't keep up with all Raylan
stuff. The podcast. We're just like, oh, man.
She had another gender essentialist song. And
She's big on that.
She's big on that, and I love her voice so much. I, like, passionately love her voice, and I listen to her music all the time. And
she was great on The Voice.
She was great on The Voice. But she's sort of, I guess, you know, the polar opposite of the sort of Maren Morris come up. And I think we could see that, too, because it's not just about jingoism. It's
right.
about,
yeah.
you know,
regressive
women
gender politics.
Going
and
back
then we have
into
Dierks Bentley with Different for Girls.
Right.
Like,
so many Different for Girls songs.
Well,
you know what? Save us, Rihanna.
That's exactly where I was going.
I was hoping that's
where
we were
exactly
headed.
Where
okay,
I was
good.
Going.
Hit a switch on a fake like a station. Sex with me, so amazing. Sex with me, so amazing.
Rihanna is here to save you all from Raylan.
Yay.
Oh, man. I didn't know that. I don't know that Rihanna even knew that that was a thing she needed to do. But she's just she's so multifunctional. She just do it, like, it just, you know, between
her next sort of, shoe line.
Or weed, you know, like, yeah, like shoe design meetings and weed hits.
Hey.
Shep out here showing off her creepers.
I got Fenty creepers in the house.
Yes. I got up at 8 a.m. to get these.
Good Lord.
On the internet.
Wow.
True. Yeah, true hype beast style.
That was my hype beast for Rihanna.
So, Sex With Me is not the biggest song on Anti. I do think in the year-end conversations, Anti did not get quite as much play as it might have.
No.
Certainly in a year of Beyonce, it may be a little bit tough for Rihanna. I mean, you could almost
launch.
Yeah, you could also contend that maybe Beyonce dropping is maybe a shot at Rihanna, like just sort of like, oh, I'm going to eat that. Like, I'm going to eat that airspace. Anti, I thought, was a little bit of a chaotic record. Didn't have a consistent narrative, but it sort of grew on me over the months. I feel like the individual songs were very, very good. And this is, I think, Needed Me is my favorite, but this is probably my second favorite. Julianne.
This is my favorite.
Speak on it.
Well, aside from the arrangements, like, you know, we can skip the topics because it's very obvious. Rihanna is singing about how sex with her is so amazing.
So amazing.
The arrangements are incredible. It is kind of like gospel. There's so many, the way the harmonies are layered is perfect. I also think that of a few of the songs that we talked about earlier, like Broccoli and Caroline and even, I guess, Friendly, there's this sort of sense that took over this year of this sort of luxuriating, I guess.
Yeah.
And this is kind of the peak
first
of
that, lines. This is first lines in a song.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. First lines, luxuriate, sort of a gossamer, like rub me down in baby oil feeling. And I think that maybe, you know, it was the calm before the storm, a little bit of just like, but I also do think that 2017 is going to be a good year for, you know, more explicit sex music.
Well, you heard it here first.
Yeah, sex true.
Hot predictions.
Yes. Well, I mean, you know, the way she kind of set the tone. This is the best song on the Rihanna record.
Wow.
I think it is. I know that's extreme, but it's and it's on the deluxe version. So, you know, if you didn't get the deluxe version.
You don't even know what we're talking about
yeah,
right
sure.
now.
You don't know.
No, but it actually had some success. I looked; it was on the Hot 100 for 8 weeks. So. you know, that's not nothing.
That's data.
That's what streaming can do for you.
That's true.
Which is awesome.
I mean, it was not a single, not pushed to radio, so that's right. pretty yeah. significant.
Well, also the thing about it, I think more than any of the other songs maybe, it really encapsulates the persona that people glom onto Rihanna for. Mm-hmm. It's very much sort of cocky and sort of slow and a little bit weeded and a little bit, I'm not going to... capitulate to anything that anyone tells me to do, and also I am sort of the pinnacle queen of her lane, I guess.
Did we all see the anti-tour? I know yes. we saw it together. Did
I
you see
did.
It?
Yes.
Okay. Because I thought that this song like well represents the tour and what you just said mm. about her. Like I think she had a year where
like that march over the yeah. over the crowd. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I thought she was like bolder. And just she took a lot more control. It was a really like well produced, cleverly designed show, and she was singing really well live a lot of the time. I thought she had a great year, and that anti totally got shafted.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a great album. A lot of times when everybody is like, "Ooh, a new album," I hate it and I don't listen to it. But that one, I listened to the first seven songs, first eight songs, like just on repeat, over and over and over and over and over again. Needed Me, I love like.
I think Anti also caught a bad one because of the way the album was rolled out.
Oh, yeah, it was super
I was just
going to
say that.
Yeah.
I mean, the narrative of the album itself was troubled, right? Mm. Like, the entire story was, where's the record? There's trouble. Rihanna's firing all the songwriters. She's written 50 songs. They've written right. 100 songs. She yeah. can't choose. And then
Over
they
the
go
course
to
of 2 years.
Right. Right. Then they go to debut one track on Tidal, and somebody accidentally hits the button and releases the entire album.
Yeah. Right.
Right.
And I think that definitely colored the way I received it.
The way that big, high-profile albums rolled out this year really told you a lot about the stars who yes. rolled those albums out. And you look at how Beyonce's record and short film rolled out, and you're just mm-hmm. like, that's a flawless person. That person has everything buttoned down. I want to be that person.
Militaristic precision, I believe you even said.
I think yeah. that is true. And then you look at how the Rihanna thing rolled out, and you're just like, is Rihanna even aware that this record is coming out today?
Right.
Like,
and then she tweeted the free download.
Right.
And
but then,
like,
hey,
like,
that was interesting.
Here's
but
the
then
media
when you,
fire link. It's right. all good.
But by the time she got to the tour, I felt like she had done like a 180, and she was mm-hmm. completely in control of her creativity.
Yeah.
But you just
yeah,
didn't
I mean,
get that sense when the album arrived. And that
day.
Actually, I was an anti-hater when it first came out, but I've come around. That's what 2016 can do.
Yeah,
there
true.
You go.
Wow.
Do we think that Rihanna needs to make money off of music, though?
No.
I mean,
no.
she is no. the number one.
If you buy 500 more pairs of those slides, she's going to be fine.
I mean...
Speaking of, if anybody has a men's size 11 in the forest green with the burgundy stripe on the side, please DM me.
What's happening?
Yeah,
Caramonica's spawn trying to get the colorway.
I'm just saying,
John like, Caramonica's well, final
this
podcast.
This is my biggest mouthpiece.
Yeah.
We are going to go out right now, and we are going to go out on a song that I did not make you guys talk about because I care about you all so deeply. And that is Sucker for Pain from
okay.
the Suicide Squad soundtrack.
Chainsmokers.
I know, Chainsmokers.
So Sucker for Pain is a song that has 19 artists on it. Definitely Lil Wayne, maybe Joe Budden, maybe Los Tigres del Norte. I don't even know. There's just like a tremendous amount. Drake White might be on this. I have no idea who's on this record.
You're on this record.
I'm on this record. Yo, your
you
boy,
should
the,
drop a verse.
Your man,
yeah.
the Foo Fighters are definitely on yeah. this record. Skrillex is on this record. Jay Huss probably got a verse on this record. Anyway, so let's listen to
Becky.
Hopefully a tolerable 20 seconds of Sucker for Pain.
I wanna chain you up. I wanna tie you down. I'm just a sucker for pain.
Devoted to destruction. A full dosage of detrimental dysfunction. I'm dying slow, but the devil trying to rush me. See, I'm a fool for pain. I'm a dummy, might cut my head off.
Okay, thanks for bearing with us through that. This is the end of the New York Times podcast for 2016. I want to thank my guests, Natalie Weiner, Julianne Shepherd, and Karen Gans. Read everything everyone writes about music at nytimes.com/music. Listen to every podcast ever with your families over the holidays at nytimes.com/podcast. Email us and tell us what your racist uncle thought about podcast at podcast@nytimes.com. Thank you to our excellent producer, Jocelyn Gonzalez. We will be back in 2017 hard.
I'm a sucker for pain. Used to doing bad, now we feel like we just now getting in. Getting in. Getting in.